of Sports with Woody Woodburn, writer and runner. This week on Attack of Sports, Woody Woodburn. I just want to let everybody know that you can get your favorite Modern Life shows, listen to them on mobile apps. There's an app for both iOS, Android, on Stitcher Radio, TuneIn Radio, all sorts of other radio apps, and you can get those for free with your favorite Modern Life shows, all preloaded and ready to go and updated. The Tech of Sports is a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network. It's Tech, it's here, and the Tech of Sports is a production of the Modern Life Podcast Network at modernlifepodcastnetwork.com. And looking forward to tonight's discussion. This is about as casual and laid back as it gets, because we're having a longtime sports columnist Woody Woodburn making a return to the Tech of Sports this week to talk about a new book, in addition to his great first one on John Wooden, some current events in the state of the sports world, and we're also going to get an update on his running streak that is still going on, and we'll see if that's going to come to an end anytime soon. And just a reminder, his first book, Wooden and Me, A Life Lessons from My Two-Decade Friendship with Legendary Coach and Humanitarian John Wooden. So this is a great book. A lot of the lessons that John Wooden passed on to his players and other people in sports, and Woody talks about that in the book. And Woody, thanks for taking time out of your busy schedule and coming back on tonight.
Hey, thanks for having me back, Rick and Steve. Was it been 2 years since I was on last?
Well, you were on episode 32, and I think we're up to 145. So you've over 100 episodes have passed in the meantime, and that means a lot's been going on in your life and your writing and your work, and we're going to talk about that tonight. And just as we'll mention here at the beginning, see everything Woody Woodburn at woodywoodburn.com, and we'll have links and all the information in the show notes to the show when it hits the Modern Life Podcast Network live page. So Woody, what have you mainly been up to in the last couple years?
Well, last time I talked to you, the Wooden and Me book came out, and it's been a really, really big success. It's been received well, and it's been fun to go around talking about Coach Wooden. And what's been interesting about that is that everywhere I give a book talk, at least one person in the audience, sometimes three or four, handful, they come up and say that they met Coach Wooden one time, whether it was in an elevator or at a coffee shop. And it's really amazing. Or they'll say that, you know, they maybe only saw him for 15 seconds and it might have been 40 years ago and still made this impact. And they just have this story that they want to relive, because even in that short a time, he could really connect with people. So that's been kind of special.
And that's really that's really the magic of John Wooden. I mean, he's been he passed years and years ago. We've all heard the stories. We've all know about the lessons and the pyramid. But it never really gets old. As is the same with your book. The lessons keep living on, and it's something, you know, generations and generations can get something from.
Yeah, and, you know, interesting, like, I shared the lessons he taught me, but some of these people have given me lessons, because he taught these lessons just in how he lived his life. So this one lady was in a coffee shop about 30 years ago, early in the morning, getting breakfast, and she was the only person there. And then Coach Wooden walks in, and it's a big coffee shop, empty, and he makes his order, and he walks over to her and goes, "Do you mind if I sit here with you?" And of course, she said yes, and they had a nice hour conversation. But how many people go into a place and we're going to go sit by ourselves? We're not going to go introduce ourselves to a stranger. But that's just how Coach was, you know, make friendship a fine art. And that's just a lesson that lady now, that when she goes into places, she looks for someone who's maybe lonely and goes and sits by them. So he just gives these life lessons in the way he lived his life.
And while we learn something from him, or we can take away, you know, bits and pieces from what the information he's passed on and the stories he tells, more than likely he did that because he was learning things from other people as well. And he was just adding that into his bank of knowledge.
Exactly. And he was just such a people person, but I think it's easy for people to try to teach you a lesson and tell you what to do, but he just did it in the way he lived his life, and just, you know, the acts he did. And that there is just a fine example.
That's why, if you haven't read it yet, Wooden and Me, available on Amazon. Get the book, get the digital version, or through woodywoodburn.com. It's a must read, and I think for a summer read, if you're looking for something that's sports and life related, this is that's a perfect beach read. It's a perfect summer read. So check out Wooden and Me, and learn a little bit more and take something. Yeah, I think every time you read it, or every time you hear a story, maybe you can get a different interpretation and take something new and different from it. So the book is more than relevant for, like I said, for generations to come. And thanks for doing the book, Woody.
Oh, thanks. And just speaking of Coach Wooden, and now we're talking topics today, you know, the Lakers hired Luke Walton.
Yep.
And I saw one of the things he said, that he wants to make practices so fun that the players look forward to coming to the practice. And that reminds me of what his dad, Bill Walton, always said, that, you know, the best hour, 2 hours of his day was always going to practice at UCLA with Coach Wooden. It was more fun than the games. And I think the Lakers have some, they need to get some more players, of course, but I think just that attitude itself, and I think that's one of the reasons that the Warriors have been so good kept past couple years, is because Kerr's made it really a fun element there for them. So there again, it's kind of Coach Wooden's lessons come in full circle through Bill Walton down to Luke.
Yeah, you're moving right along with the talking points I wanted to hit here, Woody. What would Coach Wooden have thought of this year's NBA Finals? It was really intriguing, of course, down to the last minute. But just the styles of play, the athleticism, controversy. This year's NBA Finals really had it all.
Yeah, although Coach Wooden, even before he passed away, he started to like the women's game better than the men's game. He wasn't really a big fan of the NBA of recent, just because it's so much showmanship and slam dunks. He wasn't a real big fan of the three-point line either. So I don't think, I mean, what would he think of the Warriors, right? I mean, they're just so crazy with their
team. I would think he would like Steph Curry.
Oh, he would like Steph Curry, but I don't think he's a big fan of the three-pointer where you drive in and you might have a good shot towards closer to the hoop, and then you dish it out for a 25, 30-footer. And then I don't think he would have liked the way it was refereed either. I think it was just too physical. He liked the finesse. He liked the give and go, and he didn't like a lot of the contact that they allow nowadays. But of course, he would be a huge fan. He would respect LeBron's skills. I mean, he has so many skills. He can do it all. So, I mean, he would like it, but he would also like to see the referees tempered a little bit, I think.
Yeah, I mean, everything changes. And even during his long career, he had to adapt a little bit to the styles, to the new generation of players that he had. And continuing on with basketball, about a year ago, Woody, did you see the Kareem documentary on HBO? And what did you think of that?
I got to admit, I missed it because I don't have HBO. I'm going to have to.
Oh, my gosh.
What was it? Terrific.
It was fantastic. And, I think John Wooden kind of he evolved along with Kareem when he was there at UCLA, and Kareem, of course, speaks fondly of it. And the movie just really chronicles his life in and out of basketball, and it's just an amazing life he had that came out of high school and then to UCLA, and then of course his years in the pros with Milwaukee and Los Angeles. I have to assume it's on DVD or on Netflix or somewhere, Redbox or somewhere. But it was fantastic, and you for one have to see that. What are your opinion of Kareem now as he's come out of his career, and he's kind of still making news and still putting out his opinions.
Yeah, and what I really like about Kareem is when I covered the Lakers when he was playing, he was very difficult with the press. You know, he's very aloof, but boy, he's really warmed up in the years since. And he's just so intellectual, and he's written so many books. Coach would really admire that about him. And Coach always said he learned so much from Kareem, just about how mean humans can be. Cause he saw firsthand how Kareem was treated in college by fans and stuff, calling him names and such. Cause he was the big Goliath at that time. And then Coach also was very interested in, as you know, he's very spiritual, he was very Christian, but he didn't want all his players to be Christian. He wanted them just to have some faith or religion that they felt was their own. So he's very interested in learning about Kareem's faith and Jamal Wilkes' faith and all his players' faith. So, he said, learn as if you'll live forever. Live as if you'll die tomorrow. So Coach really liked to learn. So he would be very proud of Kareem.
The wisdom lives on from Coach Wooden, and definitely Woody and anyone else listening, if you haven't caught that Kareem documentary that played on HBO for probably a month last summer, it's a fascinating watch, and it kept me riveted. I can't sit there a lot of times and watch a documentary for an hour and 45 minutes, but this one was compelling, and anyone I've told to go to see it. They thanked me for it. So we're with Woody Woodburn here, author, and sports opinions from Woody, and he's got a bunch of things going on. And Woody, a second book out, not along the same lines as the John Wooden book, a little something different, but something I'm sure you're proud of.
Yeah, it's called Strawberries in Wintertime, Essays on Life, Love, and Laughter. And it's a collection of, I also do a non-sports column in the newspaper. So it's a collection of those, but there's also quite a few sports columns. I got one on Muhammad Ali and Magic and Louis Zamperini. And then I got things like going visiting and kissing the Blarney Stone and growing up having my lunch hijacked by this big Adam, this big Labrador that would get me every day on my way to school. And so it's just a very much a variety of different essays.
And so is this a collection of your columns, or is there some new material in there as well?
There's some new, but mostly they're columns, yeah. And I know one of them was about Muhammad Ali.
Yeah.
And that's timely, so we could probably discuss that a little bit. I remember it was 20 years ago, exactly. And my son was 6 years old. And so Ali was at the Anaheim Convention Center doing an autograph signing. So I went there to do a column, and instead of just interviewing Ali, because he's already, not very talkative at that time, of course. And so I was just going to watch him interact with the fans as they got their autograph. And so all the way down there, I was telling my son, he's the greatest. Muhammad Ali is the greatest and this and that. And so we sit there for about an hour and a half watching Ali sign, and he hasn't said a word at all. He would mug for the camera to take pictures with the guys, and his hand was so shaky from the Parkinson's that between signing, the tablecloth was just getting all marked up. But once he would start signing, his signature was perfectly smooth. It was like, because he'd signed it so many times that part of his brain wasn't affected. So we're there for about an hour and a half, and it's time to go. So I tell Greg, we got to go now. And he goes, no, not yet. I got to say goodbye. And he says that softly because we're sitting off to the side of Ali. And Ali turns and he heard him. And he goes, come here, little man. And that was the first words he'd spoken in an hour and a half. And he puts his arms out, and my son goes in there and he gives him this big hug. And it was really cool. But so then after they break away from the hug, Ali puts his palm out, basically give me five. And my son, who back then when he was six, he would like slap your hand so hard he might break a couple bones, But he could sense that Ali was a little fragile, even though he's this big man. And so he slapped him nice and soft, and then he puts his own palm out for Ali to slap. And as Ali goes to slap it, my son pulls his hand away and goes, too slow. And with that, Ali just broke into this big roar of laughter. And he grabs my son in this big bear hug that lasts for about 30 seconds. And so that was like really a big thrill for me. And then as we're walking away, my son looks up to me and I said, he's 6 years old. And he goes, you're right, Dad. He really is the bestest.
Something that's even though he was 6 years old, that's got to be something he'll remember the rest of his life. But how many people has he told that story to?
Oh, a lot. And Ali called him little man, and now he's 6'3", so he's the big man now. But and so then 6 months later, that was just a brief encounter. So Ali was giving these talks at inner city LA about just talking to the high school kids, about tolerance. And so we go to four different high schools on this bus tour. And at the end of the tour, like after 6 hours, there's a media room, VIP room, and we're in there, and Ali did a couple of magic trips. He made a handkerchief disappear and whatever. And so then he's across the room and he looks at me because we're on a bus, so I hadn't seen him one-on-one at all. And he motions for me to come over. So I walk across the room and he just looks at me and he goes, you got a little boy? And he holds his palm down by like his hip. And I go, yeah, he had remembered. And then he turns his hand, writes that up, and he pulls his palm away invisibly and goes, too slow.
That's
so he totally
awesome.
Remembered 6 months later my son, which was just, it was really amazing to me.
That's amazing. I'm sure that blew you away too.
Yeah, and then actually he signed an autograph for Greg then, because Greg didn't autograph the first time, so we got that autograph. So it was just these two magical moments. And like Ali was in this shell at that time from his Parkinson's, which just showed that within his shell of silence, he was still very sharp.
Yeah, it was just the whole week there of honoring Ali was really riveting television for the most part. And we we don't see the likes of a personality or a celebrity or anything like that pass away. That just shows how he resonated with with everyone who lived during the during his lifespan, and it was just amazing to see. And hopefully, you know, as you know, Coach Wooden's philosophy and wisdom has lived on. Hopefully, some of that the tolerance and the just the surviving and having your own standing for something will kind of be the hallmarks of Ali through the years.
Yeah, he really did stand up for a lot of things at risk to his own self. And you'd like to see maybe a few more athletes use their platform to do that. And one good thing I think about Ali, sometimes when you see somebody pass away, you see this outpouring afterward, and you just wonder, did they know about this beforehand? And I think Ali really knew. And I think when he lit the flame in 96 for the Olympics, I think that was almost like a precursor to what happened just now. I think there was a big outpouring back then, too. So I think he got to kind of see how beloved he really was. And I think that's kind of neat.
Yeah, I think he realized it and knew his place, and we didn't. And he was kind of, I mean, he was out there, but even you know, even over the last 20 years after he lit the flame, he was still a private person, and you know, he kind of picked and chose when he appeared and when he did his public appearances, and I kind of admired him for that.
Yeah, he was a champion in all ways, I think.
Yeah, let's take a quick break for Amazon here. And, of course, Woody's books are available on Amazon. And you're doing any shopping here on Amazon, use the affiliate link here at the studio, modernlifepodcastnetwork.com/Amazon for any and all of your shopping. You just enter that URL in, and no extra cost to you. Just do all your shopping. And it helps the studio here bring you all the programming we do. We've added new shows. We've grown. We have podcasts that are up for podcast awards. So it's really been a banner year here and a banner couple years since the last time Woody was on. So take care of your shopping needs on Amazon, modernlifepodcastnetwork.com/Amazon. And we appreciate that and the partnership we have with Amazon. And, and Woody, I knew about it the last time, but we really didn't get a chance to talk about it. And your running streak, you want to fill people in on that this is something that, you know, there's Cal Ripken streaks, there's hitting streaks. You have quite a running streak going on, and is there an end in sight to it at all?
Well, don't try to jinx me here.
No, but I don't want to jinx you. I didn't know if you were like you had set a you know a date or something. We're gonna do it or until this, or it's just gonna keep going on as long as you can.
Well, actually, so I've always been a runner. I've done marathon stuff, but after I had a hit by a drunk driver, which I chronicle in Wooden and Me. I had to have neck surgery. So then when I started running again, I'd had running taken away from me. So then after about 3 months, I just noticed I hadn't missed a single day. And I started running streak, see how long I could go. And then about 5 years into that, I found out there's actually an association, United States Run Streak Association. There's this real affiliate. So I joined that. And so I've now run this coming July 7th will be my 13th streakiversary. So that'll be 13 years in a row without missing a day of running at least 3 miles. So that's actually 4,734 days as of today. And I guess that the total miles during that streak is 46,000 miles. And my average mileage during the streak is 9.7 miles per day. So it's just kind of a fun little thing, and we'll take it as long as we can go. But 13 years sounds like a long time, but there's actually guys on this run streak that have 20, 30, and there's a handful that have over 40 years in a row. So it's pretty amazing, some of these guys.
Now, the only breakdown it doesn't give you there is how many miles is it around Earth? So how many times have you run around the world with that 40? I'm looking at it right now. Around the equator, it's 24,000 miles roughly around the equator. So you're okay, coming so up on circling the globe twice.
Yeah. By the end of this year, I'll do it. Yeah. Knock on wood.
Yeah. Let's hopefully keep it going. And if people want to know how Woody's streak is progressing, I like that you have it up here on your on WoodyWoodburn.com. Off in the right hand column, you have your running streak that gets updated.
Yeah, I just have a little. I update that. Yeah, and then I remember one time, like being sick. Of course, people always ask, "Well, what do you do when you're sick?" And you know, food poisoning I had once was really a bad run, and I've had the hamstring Achilles injuries that I run through. But I remember one time I went to London and my flight was delayed and whatever. So I actually get in at London with the time change, you know, it's 11 o'clock at night. So I'm running in the airport and this person goes, "Hey, bloke, you must be a Yankee because you're crazy.
You weren't like OJ, were you? And like jumping over the turnstiles and stuff? You could get in trouble for that now.
I just was off in a corner, just kind of running around this big area in a little circle. Yeah. So officially to be the USR run streak, you have to run 1 mile a day. But like I said, I didn't know about this association when I first started. So I have my own personal minimum of 3 miles. But yeah, it's pretty fun. And there's a Facebook page for all of us. And we enjoy sharing stories. And it's just part of my day. Like, you know, it just gives me something that I've accomplished every day. Maybe if my writing doesn't go so well or whatever, you have at least something you can hang your hat on each day. So it's kind of fun.
Well, and you live in a part of the country where you're able to do that also on a daily basis. If you were living in Fargo, North Dakota, you have some days during the year where it'd be a little tougher.
Yeah, there's some people, and I always tell them that during the winter, people in Michigan or whatever on the Facebook page, I go, you know, your streak impresses me more than mine, but a lot of them will run on treadmills when they have to. But yeah, everybody has their own different things. We've had fires out here, wildfires, so you had to run with a mask over your face because of the ash and stuff. So there's all kinds of challenges wherever you live.
Yeah, well, keep up with Woody's streak there on WoodyWoodburn.com, and Woody, keep that going. And the next time we have you on, we'll hope the streak is continued. And since the show is the tech of sports, let's just get your opinion on a couple things also in the world of sports. What would Coach Wooden's opinion kind of be on all the technology taking over sports now, from instant replays to all the tracking and sensors that athletes are using? I know he was, more of a minimalist when it came to that, and believed in the hard work, which is still the case with a lot of Olympians and athletes. But what do you think his opinion would be on technology taking over sports?
You know, I think he would probably like his athletic trainers to use their technology to make his athletes just as fit and athletic as they could be. But as far as the way he coached, I don't think it would affect him that much, because, you know, he said he never scouted other teams, and he just
prepared his teams. I have a hard time believing that.
I know, but he prepared his teams to do what they do best. I think he knew who the better players were, or whatever. But I don't think he really looked at the film of the other teams,
because he usually had the better players, though, too. So they were, you know, he felt he was in control, and, you know, he had the horses, and if they did what they did, you know, like what happened for all those years, nobody was going to beat him.
Yeah, I mean, you can say that, but remember, he won with his first team with just no one taller than 6'5".
Yeah.
And then he had the team that after Alcindor that he was very proud of, because he called it the team without. Because you remember, all the coaches, they were going to get their comeuppance. You know, UCLA was going to finally, they were going to get them when Alcindor was gone. But, you know, he put it together a team that won anyway. So, I mean, definitely you have to have, he's the first to say you have to have the talent, but still, lots of teams have the talent that don't make the most of it. So, and also just the fact that, I mean, the technology, he always said that he felt that his coaching happened during the week, that he could almost sit in the stands and just let the team play. That's what he really wanted to do. And that's why he was so stubborn about calling timeouts. Mm-hmm. I know he still wishes he would have called a timeout sooner against Notre Dame and that team, the loss that ended the 88-game
exactly.
streak. You know, I think they had a 7-point lead with, less than a minute, I think, and they let it go. So, but I don't think technology would have affected that. I think we can all agree on these instant replays at the U.S. Open, the golf, with the penalty, like either make the call that it was going to be a penalty on Johnson or say it's not going to be. This business where he had to play not knowing if they had a penalty or not, I think is kind of ridiculous. My thinking there is just golf. I think these players, they take such pride in calling penalties on themselves. I really don't like this business now where we have the viewers calling in or whatever, saying they saw something, some tiny, tiny, tiny infraction on video that no one can tell if it happened or not. And the players don't know what happened, so they have to almost call a penalty that didn't happen. So I don't really like that myself.
No, we've talked about that numerous times here on the show. And one, I don't know how people know the number to call to get to the, to get to the truck or to the, you know, on the course there where they can get a hold of someone to let them know about a rules infraction. And then I don't have the time myself to sit there and run a replay back and forth on my television when an exciting golf tournament is going on. So, you know, kind of lost in the shuffle, maybe not, but just a great win for Dustin Johnson.
It really was. And just the fact that these golfers actually will call things on themselves. I mean, can you imagine a second baseman saying he didn't touch second base on turning the play, a double play or whatever, or, you know, some receiver saying the ball did touch the ground. So I think we got to give these golfers kudos and maybe give them a little bit benefit of the break here.
Hey, when's the last time a cornerback called pass interference on himself?
Exactly.
Yeah, that's definitely a great point. And Olympics coming up in Rio, will we have some federations already players banned for drug use before the Olympics? And big news, keeping on with golf, Rory McIlroy said he's not going to play in the Olympics. And does that open the floodgates for other golfers to say, we don't want to play either? It's the Olympics are going to be fascinating this year for maybe some different reasons.
Yeah, this could be a turning point for Olympics, right? Whether it's going to be continue on in a positive way, or if it's going to lose some of its momentum here. It's very, you know, with Russia, as you said, the drug things, that's the one thing I feel sad about. The Olympics and just track and field is just, it's so marred now by so many people cheating with drugs that when anything fantastic happens, in the back of your mind, you have to wonder, wow, is this athlete running clean? You know, it's which is really sad for the sport.
Yeah, there's going to be a cloud over anybody that throws up any suspicion at all. So technology really a big part of the Olympics now with the training. And it's like I said, it's going to be fascinating to watch, maybe hopefully for the right reasons. But you never know in this day and age. So is Los Angeles maybe getting back in the Olympic business here a decade or so down the road?
I think there's a chance. I mean, they got the infrastructure for it, and they're going to be building that beautiful new NFL stadium, which I think is a pretty big calling card. And I think maybe the day it may come where the Olympics aren't held just all in one city either. It's just getting so expensive to build enough venues and to house enough athletes in one place that I can see them maybe splitting it off into two or three different places, which might actually be kind of a good thing.
Yeah, that might be a good thing, and it would help tourism maybe in a couple different locations, and maybe keep the crowd control a little better. And in this day and age, maybe we'll help them manage security a little better too. So that's a good idea. I know Boston, there's some talk up there where they might be bidding for a future Olympics too. So I don't an Olympics up in the congested Northeast. I don't know how that sounds.
Yeah, exactly. But if you could split it out of it, you just even imagine if you had in America and you have a couple of cities, even if you just ran the marathon at Boston on that storied course, that'd be pretty cool. You know, you could pick a couple of different venues that are very historic for a certain sport. And like you said, it would really help the congestion a little and more fans could go see it. It'd be something to think about.
Yeah, definitely something to think about and something to watch. And with your running, Woody, any trackers or fitness devices you use to keep track of things with your running?
All I have is just the modern watch that tells me how distance that I've gone and pace. But other than that, like I don't download my times and stuff like that. I'm pretty much old school. I remember back in the day when you just had a regular watch and
you hit the button for the stopwatch and
not even. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I remember my first marathon I ran was in Santa Barbara when I was in college, and there's only three water spots and there was no mile markers and times. It's like you just went out there and ran and guessed at your time until you got to the finish. It's a different ball game now.
It really is. And it's you can get so sidetracked by the tracking and the GPS and the information it's giving you. I think it's because the generation's coming up now. They like to gamify everything and have that information almost like a video game going along with them on their run. I got a notification from a friend the other day, and I had never seen this one before, that he started embarked on a 6-mile run, and you could send him text messages through the app along the way to keep encouraging him to keep going or, you know, we're with you or something. Now you can encourage people while they're on their runs.
Yeah, when I like to actually run, that's the part of the day when I'm just escape everything. I'm out there by myself. I don't really want those distractions, but that's pretty crazy.
Yeah, you can't escape that these days, Woody. No escape in that, and no escape on our smartphones. And let the listeners know if they want to see everything you have working on, if they want to order your books, what's the best thing to do? And are you still active on Twitter? And maybe you're not sending your run times and your run information, but how can people follow what you have going on?
So on Facebook is Woody Woodburn, and I'm on Twitter at Woody Woodburn. And my website is Woody Woodburn, just like it sounds, woodyWoodburn.com. And you can get some of my columns there, and you can, if you want an autographed book, that's the best place to get an autographed book, or else you can buy it at Amazon also. And, or just shoot me you can contact me by email through my website. I'd love to hear from people. So yeah, reach out to me.
You notice other trends you notice with the wooden book at all, Woody, when it maybe sales pick up, maybe around the Final Four or certain events or certain times, you notice a spike at all?
Yeah, you know, Father's Day and graduation, it seems to be really big before the holidays. And I've really been, there's been a lot of grandparents buying it for their grandsons and granddaughters because it's got so many life lessons. And what's been kind of funny is like when I talk to younger people, when I give a talk, I actually have to just give a little explanation of who Coach Wooden was, that you know, he won 10 NCAA titles and 7 in a row because, I mean, he retired in 75, so there's a good reason they wouldn't know who he was if they weren't into basketball. So that's kind of funny, whereas when I talk to the older group, they all, of course, always know who he is. But, so I just enjoy talking to people about both books, and then just throughout the year, it spikes now and then when just... one of the stories in there is it's from Coach Wooden's 7-point creed, which let's share this with your readers anyway, because really this is a lot of wisdom in just 7 points. It's be true to yourself, help others, make each day your masterpiece, which is my favorite because it kind of encapsulates all of them. Drink deeply from good books, make friendship a fine art, build shelter against a rainy day, and pray for guidance and counsel and give thanks for your blessing daily. And so the one about make friendship a fine art, I remember one time I was leaving his house, and this is in the book, and so people have read the story. So he goes, just a second before we leave, I got something for you, Woody. He goes into his office and he comes back with a copy of one of his books that just came out. And I go, Coach, you always give me something when I leave. You know, I'm going to buy this on my way home. You know, thanks for letting me know that it's out. And he goes, well, Woody, I can't very well give it to anybody else because I've already signed it to you. And so that's kind of a little funny story there. But then he goes, you know, tell you what, I want you to buy one on your way home anyway. Just give it to a friend for no reason. And so one of the reasons I wrote this book was for his lessons to be learned by others. And so a lot of people that bought the book, they write back to order another one or two or three just for no reason to give to friends. And one man even ordered 80. He said he just wanted to give it to everybody he knew just because of that one story. So that's really, of course, I like to sell the books, but even more important to me is just the fact that if that lesson's resonating, I know all of his lessons are resonating with the people that read it.
Wow, and you don't even offer a volume discount. That's a good thing.
Yeah, well, I think I gave him one, yeah.
Oh, okay. Yeah, when you order 80, that's a pretty nice order. But yeah, it just shows that...
I gave a talk on Skype to his company, yeah.
Not only are you passing along Coach Wooden's advice, you have a lot of good stories yourself and in the new book as well. So it's... that the philosophy of doing good for others and passing along that information lives on. And thanks to you for doing that.
Well, thank you. And just speaking of streaks, I want to congratulate you guys on your streak with the podcast. Over 150 now?
Well, we're coming up on 150 here for the Tech of Sports, much to the chagrin of Steve for having to produce this show and then edit it each week. But Steve has a show himself. I think he's up. Maybe over 300 or so on that one. I don't know if Steve's there to chirp in or not, but
312.
He knows 312. He knows. The Waves of Tech, one of the leading technology shows on the internet. I think most podcasts don't make it to three.
Yeah, I was gonna say that.
And over 300 there with Steve and his son Dave with the Waves of Tech. That's that should be commended.
That's very good. He must have been one of the early ones online there doing these.
He's just old. Steve's an early adopter. Sometimes that's good. Sometimes that's not. But when it comes to podcasting, he's one of the pioneers.
Yeah, so, sounds like it.
Yeah. Woody, thanks. Thanks so much for coming on and letting us talk about the book again. Always, that's always special. And I always enjoy that. And just your columns and the knowledge and opinions you pass on are just great.
Hey, my pleasure, you guys. Have a great day. And thanks for having me on.
Thanks, Woody. And you can check out everything about that we talked about and the show notes at for the Tech of Sports at woodywoodburn.com. And Modern Life Podcast Network has many other shows you can listen to. We mentioned the Waves of Tech as well as other shows and shows that are up for podcast awards this year. So check all that out, as well as over 3 years with the Two Thumbs Up Media, the internet and podcast directory that was set up by the people here at the Modern Life Podcast Network. So you can discover new shows. And it's just really all about promoting podcasting and listening to new media and bringing this to a new level. Podcasting has really grown, internet shows, and it's really on the move and keeps growing each year. So support the Modern Life Podcast Network. You've been listening to The Tech of Sports, a Modern Life Podcast Network production.